two mitzvahs to talk about this week. One's going to be just a very short comment, just I thought it was a very important lesson for one mitzvah, but I'm not going to spend much time on it. And the second mitzvah will be our major discussion for the day. So the first mitzvah is mitzvah 456. It's the mitzvah not to listen to a prophet who comes in the name of an idol. Which seems pretty obvious, you know, the Torah speaking here, we don't believe in idols, so prophet speaks in the name of an idol, you don't listen to the prophet. That's pretty obvious mitzvah. But what it really means deep down is the following. What it means is that usually when a prophet comes to give prophecy, now just as an aside, nowadays, after the destruction of the really ended in the beginning of the second period, prophecy ended, the final prophet that we had was the last. But when prophets are coming, they were fairly common. I mean, the common people are fairly common. And the way it was a prophet was a prophet that says, I'm here to God. You say, well, a lot of it. You're good. The first thing we draw is are they good God fearing servant Jews? That's question one. After that, we test them. Because the prophet has to be.
Power, you know,
back in life and say, okay, we'll already be here, and we're going to start now. Yeah, there's whatever goes to count. The reaction. And it's something that is practically gone through. There's a way to serve God. I want to put myself to learn. Thank you.
Power. You didn't really know.
that is that God will give you mercy, and mercy of mine. So God will give you mercy, and mercy of mine. So that's a very important comment for Rambam. What Rambam says, that anybody who's involved in destructive activity, and destructive, if for a good cause, become sensitized to that. Child forced into war. Yeah, that's somebody's starving, when you hear about some other tragedy, your heart doesn't feel for the person in the same way because you've become you don't have compassion. You've lost your sense of compassion. I think it's not that we're going to be murderers, God forbid, but it's more that we have less compassion about people overall. That's more of the point. Yeah.
In 1948, he saw an Arab, an old man, going on the donkey, and they said, why should we kill an old man? Let him go home. And then he went to the village, he brought all the Arabs, and he killed all the 35 Israelis.
Wow.
So he should not have suffered so much. He said, why should we kill an old Arab man?
Right.
Let him go home, safe. Came, brought all the soul Arabs.
So we have to know when to.
Regarding the desensitization, I have a favorite relation. This is a concern even with the Shohei. Am I confusing something?
I'm not aware of a source for that. I mean, but could be. I don't know. I mean, I'd love to extend this to a Shohei as well. That since he's doing a mitzvah. I personally like to extend this to Shochet. I don't know if that's the source for that, but he's doing a mitzvah. He's doing what he's supposed to do. So for Hashem to make him become a less passionate, compassionate person, you know, it sounds like he should also deserve the extra level of mercy. But I don't know necessarily the source for that. So there's a few broader points about your nidachas. Now those are from individual points, but some broader points. Number one, why is this city judged so differently individuals who just serve idols? I mean, the halacha is an individual who serves idols is also liable for execution. Here we're talking about the times where the Jews were in control of the land of Israel, with the king, with the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, Beis Mikdash, but in those times, we would execute a Jew found serving idols. So why is the city, why don't we just take each individual and execute them and say, okay, done. You know, why does the city get a whole new status? So there's a few points made about this. You know, Rav Hirsch writes that the point here is not just to bring to justice the perpetrators, but the point is that the integrity of the entire Jewish state is now compromised. Because the true Jewish state, the way that Israel is supposed to be, is a state devoted to God, with holiness, with sanctity, kedusha, and tahara. And that means that every city has to be devoted to these principles. If you have an entire city, the majority of it at least, that is not devoted to God, it's not just the individuals who are doing something wrong. It's a treason, it's a treachery to what the Jewish state stands for. That's what Rav Hirsch writes. Because Eretz Yisrael is meant to be a place that's totally devoted to God. And this speaks to the character of the entire Jewish state. That this city becomes an enemy of the state, as it were. It's not just these people have done crimes. They've become an enemy of the state of Israel. Not the state of Israel, but an enemy of the kingdom of Israel. And at that point, that's why they deserve such a terrible punishment. That's what Rav Hirsch writes, because it's a whole city. It's not just individuals. It's a city here which is going against what the government and what the kingdom of Israel is supposed to stand for. And that's the problem. You also sense from this the power of masses. Individuals that are scattered about are individuals. The damage individuals can do is, you know, is powerful, but still limited. When you have the masses together working towards a goal, whether it be good or evil, it's much more powerful. So an entity of people doing good has tremendous impact on the world for the good. But a mass of people who are performing evil, that are together, joined together, working together to perform evil, that's extremely dangerous. It's much more dangerous than individuals scattered about performing idolatry. So you might have, you know, the same number of people, or even more, scattered about a region serving idols. But they're not bounded, you know, they're not bonded together. When they come together in one city to serve idols, that's a much more dangerous situation than it would have been otherwise. That's another message you find here. Another deeper point is the following. That the I'm quoting from the Ralbag, but it's a point which is discussed in many sources, that when you see that this city has produced so many idolaters, it's a sign that the city itself is rotten. What do I mean by that? We have a concept that there can be, in a certain area, you know, the different characteristics that come from a certain area or region in the world. Not just bad, good also. So the word in Hebrew for land is eretz, which commentators point is related to the word ruts, to run. And it means that every land kind of like has its currents that push you in a certain direction. Now, we don't like to stereotype, but we certainly know that people from certain countries have certain characteristics that are not just physical, but also in terms of attitudes, emotions. So obviously a lot has to do with the culture that surrounds them. You know, if you grow up in a certain city, there's a culture in that city which impacts you. But the Torah teaches us that there's something in the air, in the ground, that also impacts the person. And the fact that people who come from France or from Spain or from America or from Canada have their unique characteristics, so again, much has to do with the culture surrounding them, but a lot has to do also with the land itself seems to bring out certain, there's a certain current in the land which brings out certain characteristics in people. Which is when people move from one country to another, right, often they kind of like blend in to what's happening around. And part of that, again, part of the culture, part of it's also there's something spiritual in the land that actually impacts the person. So this city that's produced such a mass number of idolaters in one city, it shows us there's something about this land itself. That there's some deep-seated evil in this land which impacts the dwellers that live there. And we understand that the land has an impact upon the person. So this land seems to be, you know, rotten at the core, as it were. And that's why you need, we said one of the rules is that the only way you convict an Irani Dachas is if the people who persuaded them to worship idols came from that land and that tribe. Why? Because if they're outsiders, you could say this is bad outside influence, and they were able to persuade them. But the fact they're produced by the city, and they're of the city, and they convince the city, that shows this city itself produces things which are evil. That's what it shows. So, yeah. Farming again. Right. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know the answer. I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah.
My question is a bit controversial, but before you leave, I ask it. In the hierarchy, hierarchy, in the order of sins, how does
Sifra Chinuch.
In the order of Avodah Zarah, how does this idol worship fare with the other sin which is mentioned also in Sefer HaMitzvot of sorry to pronounce the word production
I don't like to rank mitzvos per se, but I'll just, the short answer is that idolatry is a direct, you know, hit upon God, whereas any other sin is a person's own personal drives or desires drawing him in that direction. But someone who performs an act of homosexuality is not necessarily a rebel against God. Idolatry is by definition rebellious against God. And that's, I think that's the big difference. And the last point I would make is that we mentioned that this never happened, never will happen, L'hayev lo nivra, the Gemara says. L'hayev lo nivra, never happened, never will happen. And the question is, well, if it never happened, never will happen, which the Talmud guarantees it, so why are we spending time on it today? You know, why are we discussing it? So one positive point is that, well, at least that means no city is ever that evil. You know, that's a nice thing for us to think about. There's never a city which is all that evil. You know, this is indicating the most wicked, rotten city that could exist in the world, and that's never happened before. That's a nice thought to have, you know. But it's important. The Gemara then says, the question: if it never happened, never will happen. Why is it in the Torah? And the Gemara says, well, Josh Mekabel Schar. It's there for you to expound upon and receive reward for understanding it. So it's actually something in the Torah which remains totally conceptual and never practical. That's what it means. It's something which remains in the academic world, but never actually comes out into the practical world. And it's an important message for us about the Torah in general. You know, we very often we like to regard the Torah as kind of like a how-to guide, a book of rules, a practical handbook. But the truth is, the Torah is the book of truth. The Torah is not just, but the rules are a part of Torah. The mitzvahs, as we've discussed, are very much a part of Torah. The Torah is the presentation of the truth to the world. That's what the Torah is. And, you know, the same way, and we'll draw the distinction, but the same way that people who are involved in very high levels of math or science will study things that are totally conceptual and have no application in practical life, in everyday life. But they're true in a lab, and they're true in an equation, but you'll never find it in the world anywhere. But they'll study it. Why? Because it's true. It's a proven fact, so they'll study it to understand it, just for understanding. So the Torah is that we want to understand the truth. And all these factors together create an Iri Dachas, that is the truth of the world. This is indicating factors of a city that's rotten in the core, deserves destruction. The fact that never happens is irrelevant, you know, because in the world of you know, the academic world, understanding in our minds is still something that's worth time to speak about and to learn lessons from, despite the fact it'll never happen. Because the Torah is a book that presents truth, doesn't present, it's not just a rule book presenting how to live everyday life, it's a book of truth. And that's why you have mitzvahs. There's actually two mitzvahs like this. There's Yirni Dachas, there's Ben Sora Mora. We'll discuss that a different time. But the rebellious son, who's supposed to be executed. Never happened, never will happen. They're both been mentioned together. We should worry about them anyways, but not to that extreme. But Yirni Dachas, as we've said, you know, even though it never happened, there's many lessons in it. We just discussed many of them today. The power of the masses, the ideal true Jewish state, the power of a place, you know, the impact that the place can have upon a person. And it teaches us that there are some groups of people that need to be distanced and treated in a very tough way. Because when they get together and try to perform a certain act that's inappropriate, it has a tremendous destructive influence on all those that are around. Yirni Dachas, again, never happened and will happen, but it remains for us as a concept to learn from, something which we have to think about to learn the lessons from. And yeah, thank God there's never been a city that's been this evil and this rotten. There have been people like that. Never a city like this that's been this evil and this rotten deserves destruction. So that's the concept of Yirni Dachas. Any questions?
One for what?
Yeah.